Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. Welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman, and I am sitting here with a very special host.
I'm Darren Larson.
Darren got onto me last week because I didn't say, apparently a couple weeks ago, he didn't give me time to say that he was special, but
That's
I think
true.
Darren's very special.
I have a bit of a snowflake personality or something. I really don't, actually.
No, he really doesn't. You don't feel anything. But we are actually in the, I've been saying nonstop that we are in the middle of a series, but we are not in the middle of the series. This is actually... on our schedule, this is the penultimate episode of The Word of Their Testimony.
However, I did have someone come up to me on Sunday, and two more people have volunteered. So it looks like we're going to do this again later.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think this has been encouraging enough for us as the hosts. It's been encouraging enough for our church, just from what we've heard, that we'll do this again, whether it's like a long stretch of them or if we just decide to intersperse every now and then. I think it's worth continuing to do this. But I just said that the series is called Word of Their Testimony. If someone has not been listening. Darren, where does that come from and why is our podcast called that?
Yeah, the picture in Revelation chapter 12 is that believers in Jesus who have been redeemed by him overcome the evil one, overcome the enemy of their souls, the devil, by the blood of the Lamb, the work of Christ, the word of their testimony, what Christ has done for them, and speaking it. I think there's something powerful about just speaking it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Bible says, and not loving their lives unto death. So they're willing to die for their faith as well, and for the word of their testimony and for what Jesus has done.
Yeah. So why are we doing this right now at Imprint? Why has this been the thing we've done this whole year?
Yeah, it has been since January. I think part of this is having our people in our church tell their stories. I mean, everyone hears from the people on the stage on a regular basis, but the church is more than just the people on the stage.
Totally. Yeah.
The church is the people of God. And so having
People are not you or me.
Right. Exactly.
Church.
Yeah. Even talking to someone on Sunday was like, I can't talk in front of people and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, that's okay. It doesn't matter. You know, that's okay. You have a gift to give to the body of Christ as well.
Yeah.
But I think in this, it gives a chance for people in a less hostile environment. Maybe hostile is the wrong word, but
depends on if they call you special or not.
That's right. Less intensive environment just to share a little bit of their story and what God's brought them through. And it brings encouragement. It brings, I think it's powerful. Mm-hmm. I think it helps people overcome sin. It maybe even helps our church get to know each other a little bit.
I hope so. So to fulfill this goal of telling someone's story, we have a very special guest with us today. Very special guest. Who are you?
My name is Dale Voth.
That's a last name we've heard a lot on this podcast, and that's a super cool thing. We'll talk more about that later. But Dale, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's start maybe with where I was born and raised.
Yeah, let's do that.
Start at the very beginning. Yeah. I actually was born and raised in central Canada, above Montana and North Dakota.
I guess, is that Alberta?
It's the one to the right of that, Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan, so okay.
It's interesting because the two things that stand out to me from that period of time is that the mountains that I experienced as a child growing up were the curvature of the earth.
Yeah.
And experientially, knowing where Celsius and Fahrenheit cross is at minus 40.
At minus 40. I actually knew that one,
Was it super cold?
In the winters, it was really cold as a kid growing up, you know. In the summers, it got hot. Mm-hmm. It was a great place to grow up.
I admit, every time I go to Canada, I love Canada. I really do. It feels like it does feel like a different culture, even though it has a lot of similarities between our kind of American culture. But I always find it to be a little more European. I kind of like that about it.
Hmm. Yeah. Grew up on hockey.
Oh, yeah.
Hockey,
oh, yes.
Hockey
yeah.
was the and is the national sport.
Yes.
So
were you happy when we got an NHL team?
I have partial season tickets.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. So
they were kind of a letdown this year, unfortunately.
They were.
But I thought the draft was bad too. I was talking to a friend who loves hockey. He's like, the draft turned out horrible. Is that kind of true?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that we didn't get necessarily the cream of the crop.
Yeah. So have you switched loyalties to loving the Kraken or as opposed to who would you love if you're from Saskatchewan? Who would be your team?
Well, ironically, I was a Boston Bruins fan.
Oh, okay. Weird. Okay,
so
interesting.
I grew up in the era of watching Bobby Orr. Number four, Bobby Orr was my player. So
that's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you grew up in Canada. We're not in Canada right now. I guess there's a lot of time between then uh-huh. and now. When did you come to the States?
Moved down here with my family when I was going into my junior year of high school.
Hmm, gotcha.
So and have been here ever since. And so it's been it was a really difficult move to make at that point in my
yeah,
life.
Yeah, I would believe that. And if you're in high school, I mean mm-hmm. that's like towards the end of high school as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. So it was like picking up and I mean I moved from a small community, a city that was probably like 120,000 people, all up the biggest city in the province, huh. to moving into a school that had, I mean, that, so I'm moving into the school situation, but it was, the city here is way bigger, a lot of different influences, a lot of things that I had never experienced as a kid growing up, and
more pressure, peer pressure and things like that?
A lot of things like that, yeah. Yeah, and right. and then just trying to find a peer group that I felt like I could fit in. I was fairly plugged into the church where I grew up.
Yeah.
Had a really close-knit peer group. And yeah. then trying to reestablish was a little bit difficult.
Yeah. So you did grow up in church. It sounds like your family was were church members and you were part of that as you grew up as well. Yeah. What was that like for you guys?
Yeah, no, it was good. It was interesting because I just had most of my kids over yesterday and my dad was over yesterday too as we were kind of reconnecting after being out for a little bit. Yeah. And was just reflecting on the heritage that I guess I feel like that I've been blessed with is I was asking my dad about his dad and what he remembered of it and knew that his dad's dad was actually a believer and his dad was a believer. And so I grew up with Christian parents, which, you know, I look at that heritage now. I didn't appreciate it when I was younger, but, you know, looking at that now, that's just like so huge to
me, really
is that heritage that comes along and really has maybe established a foundation and just thinking about like how do I make sure that I inculcate that and pass that on to the next generation of grandchildren
totally
that are just around the corner.
I was going to say that's not too far off for you.
No, for me, that's,
you're not a grandparent yet, are you?
Not a grandparent yet. And so that's,
I think I know your kids. So that's amazing. Yeah. That's cool. And so you come to Seattle at that point. I didn't catch you said you come to the States. Are you in the Seattle area at that mm-hmm. point? Or are you somewhere else?
Okay. Yeah, no, actually my dad is still physically living in the same house out in Mill Creek on the sixth fairway.
Oh, Mill Creek Country Club.
At the 150 marker. He still lives there. He's been there for 43, 44 years. Oh, yeah.
Man. Yeah. Can you introduce me to your dad at some point?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to go out there and play some golf.
That's
very cool.
So that's where they moved to. And so I came down, finished 2 years of high school, and then went to Seattle Pacific.
Okay,
so.
I was going to ask. Yeah. Yeah. What was your kind of goal in life after you graduated? What were you kind of aiming for, and what brought you to SPU?
So I was aiming for I wanted to be an engineer and I had dreams of being like a chemical engineer or something. Anyways, I ended up, falling into computer science.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I couldn't cut the deep, engineering problems, the math and stuff that was associated with that. So
whiteboards and white birds full of math. Yeah.
So, I had very interesting, The one that kind of stands out to me is my physics professor. I loved him dearly. He was just a super great guy, and he would crank out integrals on the board, and he would jump like 14 steps and go. Yeah. He'd always say to the class, "Check my algebra." And I'm thinking to myself, I can't even keep up with what you're doing here. Man. So, but fortunately, through the program, it was one of the very early programs at Seattle Pacific that they started introducing computer science, and so I fell into some of those classes and found I was a natural bent to that. To being able to do the software development and just that whole thing, everything seemed to make sense to me. So, graduated with a computer science degree 4 years later and embarked on a career that has turned out to be a great career. But I would say that it wasn't like I laid in bed when I was in college going, "Hey, I want to
dreaming of computers."
Yeah, yeah. I want to do this, but it has turned out to be.
So, what has your career been? What's had you on the path for the last years?
Well, so the career started in manufacturing. I worked for the big airplane manufacturer around here for a number of years, and then I went off to Amazon and worked with them when they were just a bookseller for a number of years. And I worked for wireless, singular AT&T, and then I worked for Washington Mutual. I helped take them down.
Oh, interesting.
Rode them all the way to the down and until they were merged.
Huh. And you were part of the computer engineering work there, kind of behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. And now I currently work for Microsoft.
Wow. All right. Amazing. Was your experience in all those jobs kind of similar, always computer engineering, or did you ever do something else in Boeing? Were you a computer engineer?
It was always computing, but I manage teams now. So
interesting.
Not as in the product teams, yes. But as in
I manage
groups of people. So.
Yeah, that kind of happens in the world of in the world of tech sometimes. If you're good at something and you're good with people, they kind of say you should be a manager, and before long you have 20 direct reports, right? Did I get into this for the right reason? I thought I was going to be doing computer stuff, and all of a sudden you're managing people. It's funny you mentioned Amazon. I remember those early days of just books, when it was kind of strange old Netscape browsers, and you're just buying books on there, and that was all it was. That's funny, you were there in the early days. Did you enjoy that role?
It was very energizing, especially the early days. It was super energizing. I mean, I think there was 800 employees all up in the company when I worked for them. So it was a very fun time. There was a lot of great activities that we did, a lot of hours at the office, lots and lots of hours, but lots of kind of social activities of bonding as a group. So it was a super exciting time.
Yeah, you've had the experience. Funny, I think of people that I know around here, and they either work for Boeing, Amazon, or Microsoft. You worked for all three.
Yeah, that's true.
You've had the experience. Of course, there's some movement around
all the pillars. Yeah,
I think there's sniping of employees and good employees, right? That kind of happen between those corporations. Are you enjoying what you're doing now?
Yeah, I do. I enjoy what I'm doing. I'm super motivated by being able to work with people, and it's really cool now to be able to work with early in career individuals, kind of help them get focused on their career and share what I've maybe learned over the course of time and see them succeed. That's where I get super excited and enjoy that piece of my work way more than, because solving engineering problems, it's the same time and time again.
Yeah, there'll be another problem.
But the people are what really what makes a difference. So
100%. I like that.
Yeah. Well, hey, let me ask, let's scoot back a little bit now. You said you grew up in a church in Canada, that kind of thing. What has your relationship with Jesus looked like through your life? How did you, I know you said you grew up in a believing family, and I think that's a huge blessing. I had the same experience. Mm-hmm. Who was Jesus to you when you were growing up, and has that changed over the years? When would you say you kind of stepped into a relationship with Jesus, and what did that look like?
No, I was going to answer just no, nothing's changed. So make it super short. No, that's not
That'd
true
be
at
awesome.
All.
And we can just sit here and stare at each other like crickets.
So what else are we talking about?
No. So when I reflect on my life and I think about the now measured in decades of time, I think of three broad sweeping periods. I think of the kind of the early period where it was really, I call it maybe transactional faith. And the faith of my family, so it was more, I did this because this is what you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you are a believer because that you were born into that kind
you're
of
a Voth,
thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then when my oldest was born, it's like, I probably ought to dig into this a little bit deeper and figure out why do I really believe what I believe and understand a little bit more. And that led me on a journey that rapidly landed me in a program called Bible Study Fellowship that you probably heard of. And so I spent probably the next 9 or 10 years in the phase of gathering head knowledge and digging in and understanding broad sweeping themes inside the Bible and figuring out how things fit together and all the pieces. And I really enjoyed that time too. It was very, very good. And then I would consider this last phase is, And then things kind of led up to, now we're digging a little bit more into my story. So I had a marriage that fell apart, and that was about the time that the third phase of my faith kind of kicked in, which is what I call the 18-inch journey. The 18-inch journey from between my ears down to my heart.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know how many inches down I've come. The days I feel like it's just I haven't progressed past maybe a quarter
maybe
inch,
jaw. Yeah.
And sometimes I figure it's been a deeper journey than that. So.
Yeah. So transactional kind of head knowledge and then heart kind of thing, like three areas of your life in a way.
Yeah.
Like when you went to BSF, did you do that on your own choosing, or did someone invite you? And what do you feel like you got out of that?
I did it on my own. Like I sought that out. I felt like that was something I had heard about it. I don't even remember exactly how I heard about it. I ended up bringing my dad. And, you know, to this day, he talks about those years that he and I went together and did that together. But no, I sought that out. And so, well, the format was super structured, which is tends to fit my personality. Like,
you, the computer engineer.
You do it this way.
And then this thing happens. Yeah.
So it was good. And so the things I got out of it, I mean, so I went through it in the years when they had 5 years. I don't know how many years they have now in the program, but they had a 5-year program, and I think they added a sixth year. And so you went through the New Testament, the Old Testament, and like the minor prophets. And I think that was the most interesting part, getting into the Old Testament, because like I probably read the Old Testament, but I can't really say that I understood how it all fit together. But that really, it really brought everything together so that I kind of understood the Old Testament, how it relates to the New Testament, and, you know, how things point all to the big story, the story of grace.
That's cool. Did you find it? So it's interesting how, I've heard this with seminary students before too. You go and you end up becoming kind of a monument to Christian faith, as opposed to having a kind of excitement or a vibrancy to your faith as well if you're in seminary, because you're just getting all this head knowledge. Did you feel like BSF kind of just made you smarter, but not kind of more sensitive what the Lord was doing? Or is that kind of what was going on?
Yeah, so that would be the period of time when I felt like I was, you know, like it's great because I did well in school. I love school. I love studying. I love that whole process. So this was like just, you know, 8 or 9 more years of school that was great to dig into and really gather that knowledge and pull it together. So yes, I would say that would be true. And so I think, you know, life circumstances, as they kind of unfold and, you know, God's graciousness, I guess, you know, has really moved me past that and understanding really the fullness of what is grace and mercy look like, but that'd be saying too much, because I don't know that I really understand the fullness of it. I'm on that journey.
Sure.
I'm on that journey to that piece of it. So,
which I bet you all of us should say that if we're being honest, right?
I think I've arrived. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I know you said when your oldest was born, you thought that was when kind of you thought, I need to do something about this. What was it that kind of made you, what was the desire there in that? Was that to just make something more of your faith for yourself, or was that more
figuring out the Bible?
Just figuring out the Bible.
Is this
like,
true?
Or? This is something that has been a part of my life for my whole life. I know you said you grew up in a Christian home. Like, was it more like, I just really need to investigate this and see if it's for me? Or was it just kind of like, I don't know, needing a shot in the arm?
It's a really interesting question. I don't know that I pondered that question much in terms of thinking about it, but it's, I guess my initial answer on that, or my first thought, is kind of the fact that it wasn't really a question as to whether this was true or whether this was for me. It was more like, like now all of a sudden I had this accountability for this new life. Like, I felt this like heightened accountability. Like now all of a sudden I'm the role model. Like I need to be plugged in and really understand pieces of this that I hadn't really dug into before. And so, you know, my solution, if you don't know something, you learn it, right?
Yeah. I mean,
so that you dig into it so you can completely understand and be able to dig into it. Well, I mean, there's many, many years that went by before I had to actually draw on that knowledge. But I mean, it was kind of the way I guess I would have, that I was preparing for that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Who was Jesus to you at this point? How would you say you related to Jesus and the God of the Bible?
He was my savior. I mean, I you know, rolling back to you know, let's go all the way back to the beginning. So, you know, I don't know what age I actually accepted Christ as a young child, and then as part of my moving here, when things were, I mean, they were rough for me, and so I got plugged into a church group here and ended up going to something called Northwest Teen Jamboree, which was a collection of, I can't even remember where we went. I think we went to Ellensburg or something. It was like at Central, I don't remember exactly where it was. So it was a bunch of youth groups that show up, and of course, it was like a big rally. And I remember making that commitment, really, this is really what I want to do. I want this to be who I am, as I want to follow Jesus. That commitment was there.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, then life kind of starts to unfold, and you know, you go to a quote unquote Christian school that I don't know that I would. I mean, anyways, there's that whole program now. So I'm kind of in that track and pursuing career and wanting to make something of my life. And then, you know, as having that expecting that first child is just really starting to think about, well, you know, like starting to look at my dad and going like, what kind of things did he do? What kind of things did he say?
Yeah.
What are the things that were really impactful for me as a child growing up, and how do I emulate some of those same things that I really wanted to be able to carry forward from a faith-based perspective? So mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like a crystallizing kind of reflective moment when you're there waiting for this little life to show up.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, what have I made of my life so far, and what trajectory are we on, and what's going to be best for this little person? So
yeah.
Would you say that, so how many kids do you have, by the way, now? Tell us, introduce you to your family real quick.
Well, I have 3 children by birth, and then I have now a daughter-in-law, which is Amy, that's Aaron's, and then my daughter, Sarah, is engaged to a young man by Reggie. And Dan and Lauren was on here too. She's connected to the family also. So
that's why we called it the Vothcast recently, because there's a whole Voth family connection, which is very fun. So so when your first kiddo came, do you feel like that you were on the right path? I mean, what was life like for you?
Yeah, we were plugged into the church. You know, it was like I got involved in, you know, on different committees. So yes, just kind of throwing myself into that because I thought that was, you know, the next step along the maturity path.
Yeah.
To be there.
And raising kids and things like that. Did that, what was that like for you and for your life and for you and your wife?
What I usually say about children is I say that children for me has been the greatest joy and the greatest pain.
Yeah.
And not pain in that it's intentional pain from their perspective, but just the intense love that you have for you, or I had, you know, for my children. It was just the swings there. And so having children is something I would, what a joy, what a blessing. I mean, and I think now of kind of where they're all at with their walks with Christ. I was telling this yesterday is just how much joy that gives me to see where they've kind of all pivoted in their life and are on a trajectory that is, you know, walking closer with Christ. And, you know, I don't know what life unfolds, but that just brings incredible joy to me.
I agree. I've watched and gotten to know your kids and in-law-ish and, you know, in-laws and in-law-ish kids, if you will, or something like that. And it's been really cool to see God transform the lives of these young people as well. And I've been really grateful to kind of be a part of that. I mean, Aaron serves in student ministries with us. And I mean, he's just leading a group of young men, you know, young middle schoolers. And I mean, that's just super cool. And like, there's this, so you talk about heritage earlier, like, honestly, Dale, some of it's happening. I mean, I get to witness it, which is super cool. And I imagine that's not always been the case. I imagine you probably wondered at some point what's going to happen. So let me ask you, like, do you mind sharing a little bit? You mentioned your marriage kind of dissolved. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that story and what that was like for you and what that was like for your faith as well?
Sure. No, I'll share a little bit about that. You know, so I think...
By the way, you're coughing because you just had Father's Day, right? Because you guys had to celebrate late Father's Day because COVID kind of spread through your house. So Dale's making a sacrifice by being here. So I'm grateful for that. So, yes.
So, you know, when any relationship like that comes in, and there's ripples of pain that ripple through the ecosystem, right? I mean, in my life and my former spouse's life, in, you know, surrounding family, like everybody is touched by something like that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, not only did that begin the journey, the 18-inch journey, as I like to call it, it's also, there's other significant things that kind of changed in my life is to how I looked to God really for healing in my heart. And, you know, the amazing thing about that is God is faithful.
Yeah.
I mean, and I say amazing, like, that should be a surprise to anybody. But no, experiencing it is different than being able to declare it and say,
yeah, totally.
God is. Yeah. But having experienced that healing in my heart over the course of time, you know, from all kinds of things that has just been has been really a great experience. And I think the other thing that really has I've learned, you know, early on in life, it was career, then it was kids. And I don't know that I really cherished deep male friendships. You know, it was more like, hey, we did things together or whatever. But, you know, I had a particular individual that was in my life that was came alongside me kind of at that point. And there was some pivotal conversations that we had about, like, what are you going to do, Dale? Are you going to allow this to make you better or bitter? And so I chose the better. And so, and kind of the pivotal verse for me, and I may not get it 100% right, but it's, we demolish all arguments and pretense that set themselves up against the knowledge of God and take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. And
so, that's 1 Corinthians 10, I think. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so the idea there, as I kind of reflect on that and thought about it, you know, and that was kind of like a lot hung on that for years, is just, it's kind of I focused initially on taking thoughts captive.
Yeah.
And then it dawned on me, well, there's this whole front process about demolishing the arguments because the evil one wants to take you down by planting bitterness, anger, whatever it is in your heart. And so it's not only about taking the thoughts captive, it's also about the whole idea of demolishing those arguments that get set up. And so that, you know, that kind of set me on a trajectory of going you know, these close or developing close male friendships, now that I have a broader circle of male friends that I feel really, really connected to, that not only provide accountability, but they provide encouragement and the ability to share at levels that that I hadn't ever experienced before. And that to me is another piece of one of the treasures or the rich things that God has put into my basket of things that I've been fortunate enough to experience. And, you know, that's another big piece of it. And that's really led into, you know, just watching as kind of life has unfolded and being able to draw on that walking through and feeling God's faithfulness or seeing his faithfulness is really how that's played it. You know, it's played itself out time and time again. In life, as I've kind of moved forward, so
man, can I ask how did you figure out how to kind of demolish the arguments, if you will, or take every thought captive? Were there things that you did? Were you memorizing scripture? Were you kind of preaching the gospel to yourself? Was it just the male friendships where someone was actually encouraging you in the right way? Because I would agree with you, like the friendships there can help in so many ways, whether it's confession or care or just, you know, just having someone to be there. Like what did you do in that time to kind of take that verse and make it practical?
Well, so I think that a big piece of it was, first of all, committing scripture to memory.
Yeah.
It's just spent, you know, a lot of time committing verses to memory that I could draw on and would be able to, you know, come to mind. I did a lot of journaling.
Yeah, good.
A lot of journaling of feelings, a lot of journaling of pouring out my heart and praying and, you know, in my journals, you know, time in God's word. And then, you know, making sure that I was connecting and not isolating myself, but connecting with, you know, others to be able to really. And then, you know, you can have it a really inward focus. You go through something like that, you can be really inwardly focused, or you can then focus and say, okay, how do I get this? And I invested a lot in my kids at that time. Like I just poured into their lives and wanted to try to minimize in any way pain or whatever they were feeling. I couldn't take it away, but I could certainly not be an absent father. I could be a present and loving father to try to plug in. And so those things I think kind of coming together are really what that amounted to. And if I could explain how it worked, I don't know. It's like, it wasn't like a single day, but over the course of time, that healing process takes place. And then suddenly the pain is not there anymore. Not like it was. And you know,
that's crazy. I think it's cool to hear. I think for a lot of people, and I don't know if it's just a cultural thing where we are or what, but a hard moment is often one where people want to withdraw, and kind of I'll bear this by myself. And then once I've polished myself up, I'll step back into community.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it sounds like you did the opposite. And I think that's very scriptural. Yeah. I mean, that's what we talked about last year with gospel culture kind of being a focus of
That's
like,
right.
you know, there needs to be, the church in general needs to be a place where people can show up with scars and bumps and bruises, not even with scars, like still bleeding almost. Yeah. And from that community can come healing. So.
Well, I can second the journaling thing. That's personal to me, but I think it's actually should be personal to more people. So if I can stand on a soapbox for a second, kind of, I think my journey from kind of head to heart a little bit happened as I began to journal as well, because I started to be able to be honest with God. And before it was the same way. Like I think I probably have a little similar personality to you, Dale. Like I want to figure out this Bible. I want to know how it connects the Old Testament and the New Testament. I want to know these things. And yet I could tell at some point, like it just becomes not, it's not even pride necessarily, but there's something like, I figured this, I got this now, you know. But in order to connect this to here, this 18 inches that you talk about your journey, I relate to that. And a lot of it was from just writing some of my thoughts, feelings, prayers down to the Lord and expressing those things. It actually made it super, super helpful. So I would commend that to anyone too, just as a practical way of like learning how to move the head knowledge to the heart knowledge. I think that's a good thing. So
I think the other thing that really has been impactful is, again, you know, I have several of these guys that we get together almost weekly to just ponder the things of God and to ask the questions that maybe you're not supposed to ask, or you're, yeah. you know, you dig
yeah.
in. And,
oh, yeah.
And I think I was telling Aaron yesterday, or maybe I was telling all my children, is it's, so I've realized as I grow older that it's not that I don't know a lot about God and understand a lot of pieces. It's just that I found that the pool or the bucket is so much bigger. So
yeah,
I feel like I'm that much further away from arriving,
yeah,
if you want to call
totally,
it that.
Totally.
And so some of that has been, you know, really good to be able to have a conversation with, you know, we sit around in my backyard around the fire pit, and sometimes we get a little glass of scotch that
totally.
Can have a
zesty beverage. Yeah.
Be able to have a conversation about God and like, what does this mean and how do we apply this and how should we react and what does that mean in life? And so those have been very, very powerful conversations that have just kind of continued to develop that movement to say, all these things that we face aren't necessarily all binary. Like there are binary things,
yeah,
but there's so much gray that it's like, what should my reaction be here and how should I think about this? And you know, I'm on this journey and what do you guys think kind of thing? So
developing a Christian worldview is exceedingly difficult in our world, you know? And so in order to plug that to your kids as well, were you able to do that when they were younger as well? Or has that developed a little more as they've gotten older to kind of do that? It has.
Yeah.
And you've been intentional about asking questions and having conversations. Is that how you've kind of done that?
Yes.
That's really cool. I like that because I think that when we live in a world that's saturated by whatever media or whatever social media we're absorbing, it does feel super binary, right? Everything feels like there's my way or the highway. And if you're not this way, you're that way. And it's like, but hang on, the Christian life is actually pretty difficult and there's difficult conversations to be had. And I appreciate that you're having those with your kids. I long for that. We do that a little bit. They're funny. They always happen at the least opportune times for us. You know? It's like, I can't, you know, pour my kids a drink and sit around the campfire and have them expect to talk to me. They're like, I want to do something else. But then it's like midnight and they're like, hey, why do we live? Why do we exist? You know, whatever it is. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. So what's been your life like in Christ recently? What's been the Lord doing in your life right now?
Yeah.
And what are you seeing? What are you seeing in place of growth and whatnot?
Well, so most of you have heard my kids' stories, so which has really been super encouraging to me.
Yeah.
To hear their stories, you know, I'm looking forward to the next one that I get to hear. It's really great to hear that walk, and so. And when I reflect on their lives, so the amount of things that were left out of their stories, the flat out miracles that I've observed in my children's lives of God's care and graciousness is just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it's helped me as I walk, not be so anxious about jam and manna in the back of my tent, because I know God is faithful.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just that continued journey of what I talked about is looking for and experiencing his faithfulness and seeing it play itself out real time in my kids' lives, which is has been super, super cool to see.
Yeah.
I think, too, that, you know, having one son that is has struggled with addiction, mm-hmm. I spent, that was a hard time for me. You know, his story is his story. My story is mine. And so I think it's another area that I really struggle with is trying to not allow the temptation of fear and anxiety to creep in as I've walked that mm-hmm. journey. And I spent 2 years in Psalms, mm-hmm. just running through the heart cry of David, and the joyous times.
Yeah.
And of course, I, you know, journaling as I kind of go through it is just pouring out my heart. And, you know, it's been kind of really poignant to be in listening to Jeremiah the last couple of times is maybe blessing or the place you need to be is in captivity or you need to be exiled for
the
a while.
The hard part. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So each of us carry our own story. So I'm not suggesting that this is somehow was imposed, but you know, I need to walk the road I do. So God's been really working on my heart about, again, express or demonstrating his real-time faithfulness, not in solving all the immediate problems, but working on my heart to say, yeah, you know, I got this. And I'd like to say that, yeah, I've arrived. Hey, I don't struggle with fear or anxiety anymore. I do, big time, but I know to call it out and I can see it. And I know to what to do with it, whether I can really do that or not is another thing. And then this year I shifted it up and the devotional I'm going through is one more of preaching the gospel to you every day kind of thing. And so that's been kind of like a, you know, after coming out of 2 years of the Psalms, it's been kind of a breath of fresh air. And so there's a couple themes that have kind of hit me this year is one is, Dale, you need to stop inviting God into your kingdom and start figuring out how you integrate into his kingdom. So I think I have spent a lot of time really inviting God into my kingdom. Yeah. Because,
what does that look like? I'm just
curious. Well, if he's in my kingdom, right, we're peers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a great word.
I mean, we're peers and, you know, and it's not like I can't talk to him, but it becomes very...
You get back to transactional almost.
Yes. Yeah. It does. It flashes back to transactional. And so the thing is that transactional now is different than transactional was then, because now it feels like then it was more about, you know, job and, you know, whatever else. And now it feels like the stakes are so high when I have transactional requests. It's not about those things. It's about, God, could you solve this problem? Can you remove this? Can you do that? Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
And especially as walking with children, you know, as they've been all on their own journeys, it's, you know, God, what are you doing here? Like, when are you going to show up kind of thing? And
I have my plan. Why aren't you working within my plan?
And it turns out he's been there all the time. Right. I mean, so he's just walking alongside each of us, being faithful to his part. And are we going to be faithful to his? And so, yeah, so my prayer in my heart this year has been kind of stop to enter his kingdom rather than invite him into mine. And the other one that's kind of really struck me this year is stop focusing on shadow glories. Shadow glories, to me, the idea kind of came through some reading was, you know, so if you think about all the glory that we get to participate here on earth, it's just a shadow from the Maker.
Yeah.
And he's cast big shadows that are glorious, but they're two-dimensional. Shadow is black and white. Yeah. I mean, it's not like
it's not whatever, a whole person.
It's not Technicolor, like or whatever you call it today. I heard it grew up in the days of when Technicolor was the big deal. So it's not that. It's like, so I don't want to be captivated by the shadow glories that I see around here and start worshiping the miracles that I see or the faithfulness as I want the true, the shadow maker. Like, stop focusing on the shadow glories, but focus on the shadow maker of those glories.
So. Yeah, because now we've seen a mirror dimly, right?
But yeah, exactly.
There's more to be seen. That's a good word. Can I go back and ask you a question about you? So I can pretty much guarantee that someone listens to this either deals with addiction or has someone, a loved one who deals with addiction as well. Like you'd mentioned reading the Psalms. Are there other things you did to be patient during that time and allow God to work that you could say like, man, this was super helpful to me in this season of my life?
Talking about it. I mean, I think if my wife was sitting here, she'd look at me like, wait, you didn't talk much about it. And because I tend to be an inward processor and then it flows out on my pen sometimes. And maybe being more verbal would have helped some of that process. I tried Al-Anon.
Yep.
And that was okay. I mean, it's right for some people. I don't know that it was necessarily the long-term piece for me, but I think it was more just, again, meeting with and being able to share my heart with either close friends or with my spouse, you know, or my family, some of the family members is really, and I think it was truly though, the ultimate was really just, you know, pouring out my heart to God and allowing him to, how he does it, I don't know, but work that piece. Of course, you know, things are a little bit easier now as we're on this side of this thing. So it's, you know.
Yeah. It's probably, I mean, I know it's easy to talk about in retrospect, but I know like it was painful to go through for, absolutely, wasn't it? I mean,
it was.
Yeah. But it sounds like it's funny. Everything that you've mentioned along this line has been about some kind of vulnerability. Whether that's vulnerability between you and God, or between you and community, or between you and people who were just walking with you through this. I don't know if that was on purpose or what, but what I've heard you say is like, you know, I identify with you as an internal processor, but having boldness, you know, in Psalms you see David have boldness to come before God with things that aren't really, you know, you don't hear in the top 40 worship songs, or, you know, you see him rejoicing in things. Obviously, it's very high, but it's almost like in reading that, you can have boldness to be authentic with God, not to the end of just like, I'm going to satisfy an itch to get something out. But then, you know, again, in talking and saying like talking about it, that kind of thing, you're inviting people in to a situation that is hard. You know, it's sort of a boasting in your weakness kind of thing. So I don't know if that was something that you saw or what.
I actually didn't. It's interesting that you've observed that, but I think, you know, in your words and what you're saying and how you kind of draw on the line between those dots, it makes sense to me. I think that, that community, I guess part of maybe making a little bit of a rabbit trail on this is part of my deal about being here was, this isn't in my, like, I don't get up in the morning going, man, I can hardly wait to be on a podcast and talk about my life and have, you know.
Your email to me felt a little reticent, I'll say.
Tens of people or whatever listen and I kind of go through this. That wasn't really what I get up in the morning excited about. So here my children set the example for me yet again, you know, and so they're willing to share. And so I wanted to participate in that and go, you know, well, God's been good to me too. So why not? And the second thing that I think that my wife and I have been talking about is like, how do I take the experiences that I've walked and be intentional about making sure that I can walk with others in the same experiences?
Wow.
So, and I don't know what that looks like. It makes me a little bit afraid. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, you talked a little bit about sometimes we in church can shoot our wounded.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, and I wouldn't say that my journey has been without those shots that have come. And so having been through the process of, you know, a dissolved marriage and children that have walked their own ways and addiction, I've walked roads that maybe would be helpful for other people just to be able to connect with and say, I don't have answers. What I have is, well, I have the ultimate answer. I mean, I know what it is. Yeah. I don't have it personally, but I know what that answer is. And strangely enough, it keeps coming back to, it's not like the program you join, but it always comes back in my mind to the fact that God is faithful.
Yeah.
And he knows what you and I need. He knows what I need. Mm. He knows what that healing process is going to look like. And the more that I can surrender to him, the more healing that can take place. Mm. And I don't know. That to me is just unbelievably amazing. Yeah. I think the other thing that's really come to my thought process as of late too is sometimes I'm not intentional or not intentional enough in my prayers, but the prayer that I've had lately is, Lord, take away any of the bad, vivid memories that I have that would draw me down. Hmm. You know, whether that's walking with one of my children through a difficult situation.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever it is that I don't want to minimize the impact, but I'd like that vivid memory to be gone so that's not what's forefront, but rather your faithfulness is in the forefront.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a good prayer. I appreciate that. I also appreciate, so going back to Rex's keyword, their vulnerability, even sharing that you had a marriage that dissolved in the podcast, it takes some guts and some vulnerability there. And I appreciate that because honestly, I think so many Christians in the church feel like, I've said before, second-class citizens or something if they're divorced. And I'm like, you know, the Bible talks about divorce and talks about it pretty strongly. It even says God hates divorce. It doesn't say God hates the divorcee, right?
Yeah,
like there's a different picture there. And it's like there is grace, there's forgiveness, there's walking that out. And there's also a lot of things I imagine we can learn from those painful situations that you, I bet, would be willing to share with other people who have gone through that or experienced that. And I've never wanted anyone in our church to feel like, man, everyone's looking at me because I got the scarlet letter or whatever on my chest. And so I appreciate you sharing that because it means you're keeping with the theme of a vulnerability.
Yeah.
That
you have. And I do think, you know, what you said, a lot of times the church has a reputation of seeming more like a horse hospital than a people hospital. Like, you know, what happens when a horse breaks its leg? Not much. There's a shotgun involved, but you know, we're called to walk with people who are hurting back through. And I do think that's part of the power of testimony, because it's one thing to hear God is faithful. And to a certain point, it's one thing to read, you know, like stories in the Old Testament or in the New Testament of God being faithful. But to have someone sitting across you from you with flesh and blood on saying, hey, this is what I've been through and God is faithful. It goes the extra mile. I think that it's part of the Spirit and others helping us as we move along through this.
Well, it's interesting you say that because so Thursday mornings is like, I'm going, all right, who is out there this Thursday morning? Whose podcast can I listen to today? I mean, it just continues that message of faithfulness. I mean, I get locked in my little world of thinking my problems are, you know, and God's working in my world and I see it. But listening to these stories
totally
has been so encouraging. Like, and I thought, you know, if I can encourage one person, you know, what a blessing that would be is that I've been so encouraged by the stories that I've heard. And I know things about you guys now that I didn't know before. And
isn't that cool?
It's very, very cool. So,
yeah, I know it's fun hearing even your story about how the heritage and watching the heritage grow, that puts meaning and flesh and blood behind like seeing your kids in church or something like that. I'm like, wow, that is God at work in generations of people. And so,
absolutely.
And to hear kind of the journey that you've been on to get to that point is cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, Dale, let me ask one last question as we kind of start to land the plane here. We've talked about what's happened in the past, the three stages. You'd say you're kind of in the third stage. You're still on the head to heart journey going that way. We also talked about, you know, you're going to be a granddad soon, which is super exciting. What do you see as your calling for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future in what you're doing? I know, obviously, that's a big question. So
yeah, if you tell us now, you're on the spot. So
exactly.
You got to do it for the rest of your life.
Maybe not even necessarily vocationally, but you've been seeking to follow Jesus, you know, in any way that you can, and to try to kind of pass on heritage. What does that look like for you in the next season?
That's a really good question. One that I've actually been grappling with. You know, I guess I take a look at career-wise. I'm not at the beginning of my journey. I'm more at the tail end of that. And I still feel like I have value that I can add in my workplace. And I find that, you know, connecting with the team and the people and trying to work with them has been super enjoyable. And, you know, thinking about the next generation that that's coming with my first grandchild, I mean, one of my very close friends, David Carlson, has talked a lot about, he and I have talked a lot about his emerging, not retiring, but emerging. What does that look like? And his desire, he and Vicky's desire to be intentionally plugged into their grandchildren's lives. And, you know, for the first foreseeable years, it's not going to be that, won't be quite that. But I see really being able to carry on and be plugged into family, to grandchildren as they develop and grow. And then, like I said, is like, I don't really know what this looks like from being able to share my story more practically with people. But it is something that there's a growing passion in me for that. I think I also have a desire to, we have such a problem in this community with mental and addiction, mental health issues and addiction. And, and, you know, if I was to roll back the clock to when I was in my 20s and 30s, it was, I had a different thought process as to what the solution there was. And the solution was really just fix it. I'm so far away from that right now, and trying to figure out what that means, and how do I help in that process? Like, what are some of the things that I could do that could help that process along? So
That's cool. It is. I mean, just the statistics alone tell us how much mental health issues have arisen in the last few years, COVID exacerbating them as well. I appreciate that our staff has been working on a little bit with that, and we're even kind of, you know, secret here, trying to launch what we're doing this fall or maybe in the winter, something called the Gospel of Mental Health, where we're actually going to try to help our people kind of come to grips with the fact that the mental health crisis is not going anywhere, and we want to be honest about it in the context of the church. Again, vulnerability, to go back to your story, and allow people to share their stories a little bit and say, yeah, we don't just pray it away or something like that real quick.
Right.
It's more complex than that. And we need people to mentor in that and walk with people and to say, actually, I've experienced that, or I have experienced that in my family, or whatever it might be. And so I'm glad to hear that. It feels to me like the Lord, as the Lord does things, I see the Spirit of God start to move in his people to get us to a point where, like, well, this is all leading to a pathway. Like, the Lord is in charge of this, which is really cool. So thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for your vulnerability today and sharing with that. I'm certain that if you want to connect with Dale, he'd love to say hi to you.
Yeah.
And you can reach us at podcast@imprintchurch.org, and we'll send on the information to him so you could connect with him or send him a thank you note or whatever it might be as well.
Yeah, we sure will. Seriously, thanks for being here. It's been super cool to listen to the story of the Voths unfold and to kind of get to see some of that happen, you know, with all the baptisms at Easter and seeing them people get more involved and even seeing Reggie come to know Jesus without telling anyone about it at Imprint, which was pretty amazing.
And we're doing premarital counseling with Reggie and Sarah soon, so I'm really grateful for that.
That's amazing. Yeah, but seriously, thank you. Thank you, Dale. Guys, if you have any questions, want to send some encouragement, podcast@imprintchurch.org. We will be back next week with probably the last story for just a minute in a certain way. We'll launch something else after that we'll tell you all about later.
Maybe we'll give a sneak peek next week
we'll have
what
to.
We'll do, because I'm real excited about it. We've already recorded like 5 of our new series.
No, we haven't.
Oh, sorry about that.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.